So, Jonathan, what are you going to be for Halloween?
Well, my son wants me to be a pirate, but all he's given me is a clown's collar, a map that leads nowhere, and an eye patch.
That sounds like a pirate to me.
It is a pirate to him, and I will do it, but I might buy a pirate hat so someone else in the world recognizes me as a pirate, because he might be really crestfallen if we walk around the neighborhood and he's like, look at my dad, the pirate, and they just see a very lazy clown who barely got dressed.
Eye patch.
Yeah.
They'll be like, what happened clown? To that poor dad that his eye is damaged?
Yeah, it's not a costume.
He's using a map. He doesn't know where he's going.
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't he have a smartphone? Classic dad move. Yeah, just pulling out a road map with one eye and a clown collar.
You bring up your Google Maps. You're like, then you take a Sharpie and put an X on your phone screen or some
that's
shit.
Been done, right?
I don't know. I just made that up.
No, I've seen that done. You did just make that up. I didn't mean to negate that statement. Yeah, but I've also seen
that. Way to step on my original thought, Jonathan. I can't help it. I just can't help it.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Talking to Women About Video Games. I'm Jonathan. I'm joined by Tanya.
Yeah.
It's great. We're going to be having a spooky, fun surprise.
It's a scary day.
Yeah. It's
coming up to Halloween.
Pretty close. This is as close as we're going to get with the way this show is scheduled. And you know, one of our most popular episodes before
was episode 2.
Yeah, it was a Halloween episode.
I was just thinking the same thing.
We talked about Animal Crossing, which has a great, spooky surprise. So what's going on with video games that's spooky this year? A few things. We can talk a little bit about Pinhead.
Oh?
You know who Pinhead is?
That's the horror character.
Yeah.
Pins in his head.
That's correct.
I recently watched a little bit of a Jason film, I think it was.
Is that right? Oh, Friday the 13th?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it was 3 or 4.
Okay. What did you think?
There's a dude walking around trying to stab people, and they were just kind of going other places, and then he'd follow them there.
And then he killed them there.
Yeah, he killed them there. Yeah. So it was like, you start at location A,
mm.
He tries to stab you, so you move to location B.
He's probably going to stab you. So what happens often in those is, sure, there's 2, maybe 3 characters who go from different locations and don't get killed, but then there's like 8 characters. Each one just gets picked off. And if Friday the 13th, 3 or 4, I think there's a murder like every 7 or 8 minutes in that.
That's so cool.
It's just a series of kills.
Yeah.
People, that's what they like about it. There's a really good Friday the 13th game called Killer Puzzle. Friday the 13th Killer Puzzle, where you play as Jason and you just got to go around and kill people. The trick of it is, and if you haven't played it, you definitely should, you can't just walk because Jason doesn't walk very much. He just shows up.
Oh.
So you just move like fume, fume, fume all across the screen. So if you were a human being, you would feel like Jason just popped up behind you and then kills you. But because you can't just walk around the screen, it's hard to figure out the steps you need to take in order to move across the screen in these big swooping.
So you can get where you need to go to kill people.
Yeah, and then I think sometimes you need to like get to the exit or something at the end.
How do you die as well? I'm going to have to play the game.
Jason, water. Fall in water, fire can get him. A few different things. Explosions, I think.
Mm.
If you like hit dynamite or something. But if cops shoot him, it's usually fine. It's a pretty good game.
That's a good game for a lot of people, I think, in that case.
Yeah, yeah. We'd all like to not die from cop, right? That would be a fun treat. So, did I tell you about all the time I had with cops recently? It's a culture I really learned about. But I'm
Wait a minute. There have been cops in your life recently?
Yeah, there was a whole cop week.
What?
I had a cop week. I am going to leave that to be another spooky mystery for the listeners to wonder what the heck I'm talking about with cop week.
Oh, geez.
It's just not video game related enough that I feel like I can dive into it now without disappointing people. But if you want to know about cop week, follow me at nontrotsky on twitter.com.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you'll find out about it. But let's move on
to the video game news
about Pinhead. Pinhead's gonna be an NFT. This ethereal demon will be intangible currency. He's really coming to haunt the world and destroy it in a new way. Torture us today. And you're wondering what could possibly be happening with Pinhead that's so spooky. He's gonna be in a game called Dead by Daylight, I believe it's called, which is one of the more popular horror games these days. It's not extremely good. I know nobody who says I love it so much, but it's not that bad. And everyone's playing it, and they've managed to pull off all these big crossovers. Like, there was a Stranger Things crossover.
Oh, nice.
Resident Evil crossover, so with other games and also with non-game-based horror franchises. And now, Pinhead's coming to it.
Wow.
Should I tell you who Pinhead is? Do you remember? Do you want me to give you a brief overview?
Give me a brief overview. I'm sort of in the Conjuring world of horror.
I think.
Or in any type of biblical horror enjoy. Oh,
okay.
Like, I love...
Devil?
No,
Book 2?
No.
Oh, that's actually
this
book
is
3.
Embarrassing. I can't even... The horror film with Alice Cooper, who's the homeless guy, and it's a biblical...
Oh, you're talking John Carpenter's... not the Seventh Sign, but it's got some...
I liked the Seventh Sign, too.
Yeah, it's got some Bible talk in there. I can't remember the name. In the Mouth of Madness? No, that's the one with...
Oh, God.
The guy from Dinosaur Bites.
Yes.
The movie. Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Not that good of a movie.
What?
Sorry, it's just not. It's not one of John Carpenter's best. That was the
I liked that movie.
It's a pretty good movie.
You should see my face.
Yeah, you're not happy.
I was
about
really
it.
Offended.
I'll have to look that up later. It's not in the Mouth of Madness.
I don't think you like the same things that I like.
Sometimes we do like different things. It's true. That's okay. That's how you learn. That's how you grow. And Pinhead,
yes,
might be up your alley because he's in a film series called Hellraiser.
Yes.
Not quite biblical though, because
I know
it is hell that they go to, but it seems to be a more
the Stigmata. I liked that one. I'm sorry.
Where that lady's gonna... just bleeding?
Yeah.
That's the plot?
Patricia Arquette.
My hands are bleeding.
Yeah.
An hour later, what's going on? Hands still bleeding.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the story. So, Hellraiser, there's a magical box that not everybody can solve. It's like a metal Rubik's cube that's nothing but trouble. You solve it, you think, great, I'm smart. Nope, maybe not, because now these very particular leather-clad sort of sexual demons, but they never... They're too cold to actually pork you.
Okay.
As far as I'm aware. But they do want to mess with you and make you feel a lot of pain, but it's pleasurable pain.
Oh.
They want you to feel so bad it starts to feel good again. They never make you feel so good it starts to feel bad, as far as I know. It's just the so bad it's good.
Is that something that exists?
So good it feels... Well, I could talk to you about that on maybe a different kind of podcast. But yeah, there's things that can happen where you've already... Oh, that feels as good as it gets. You should stop. Oh, you're still going. I don't
it's
know.
It's like being tickled.
It's like being tickled. What an innocent way to put it. So Hellraiser, classic in the world of horror. First two movies, pretty darn good. Then something happened, and forgive me for not doing my research, listeners, but I know that Clive Barker... creator of Hellraiser, who is like a heavy metal but also super gay representation. He is a gay man, and he loves having his characters have queer aspects to them. And similar to Jason, people started just loving those Jason movies because they wanted to just kill those guys.
Yeah.
They stopped being afraid of Jason, started thinking, I would love to kill a bunch of jerky teenagers. A lot of people love Pinhead. A lot of people want to solve the puzzle box and go to Pinhead's hell and join the Cenobite group because they're all powerful and they are able to touch people's lives and get involved with them and mess with them hard. But they're not like evil and sadistic as far as I can tell. They are just kind of following their function and being able to live a life free of any constraints. Other than, you know, if you don't solve the puzzle box, they won't show up. But that's not that big of a deal because people are always solving the puzzle box.
Right.
So, Pinhead, people have been hoping Clive Barker's going to get the rights back and bring the series back to where it should be. But instead, it seems like some jerks might have the rights.
Oh no.
And they're
How
also
How did they get the rights?
This is where it gets really spooky. They bought them, I bet.
Oh.
And the new Dead by Daylight Pinhead crossover is NFT related.
No.
Yeah. The guy who seems to have spearheaded a lot of this stuff, I looked him up on Twitter.
This can't be the case. We talked about NFTs being the scariest thing of 2021.
I know, and they've gotten a little bit better from what I can tell. People are doing less stealing of other people's arts and selling it on NFT because now that NFTs are a big thing, I don't think those NFTs do as well. And there is a chance you'll get sued for it, even though it's a real pain in the neck to try to litigate that. There's a lot more like official Nike NFTs. I think there's a SpongeBob NFT now, and it's making a bunch of money for the people who sell them. I don't know if people who are buying them are able to resell them and make that much money most of the time. But yeah, there's going to be a Pinhead NFT that's related to Dead by Daylight. And if you buy the NFT, you have like a random chance of unlocking the downloadable content in the actual game faster or something like that. Yeah. So they're not forcing you to buy the NFT to play the game. But if you do buy the NFT, maybe you'll get the DLC for free.
Ooh. It feels sort of like an amiibo, but not.
Yeah, if an amiibo had a random chance of actually unlocking something and the amiibo didn't actually exist.
Right, it was not a tangible item.
If you bought a $50 picture of an amiibo.
This just highlights how ridiculous it
is. NFTs are pretty wild. I mean, money's ridiculous. NFTs, it boils down to the fact that...
It's gambling. This is gambling.
It's
what you're explaining.
It's the stock market. It's buying stock in something that doesn't actually exist. It's paying $100 for a coin that says $100. That's not actual currency, but maybe some other jerk will want to buy that coin for $100 later.
But specifically within this game,
yeah,
you're buying the NFT with the hopes that it might be able to unlock something, but it might not. Right?
I think that people aren't going to buy the NFT for the unlocks so much. That's just a way to try to get non-NFT people to be like, well, I guess it has some value. I shouldn't make fun of these all the time. Because NFTs get made fun of a lot. And people who love NFTs are really... Like MC Hammer, for instance.
He loves NFTs.
Loves NFTs. And he's really, really annoyed with it when people don't see. It's the future. We're not going to have currency soon. We're just going to have Bitcoin and NFTs.
Oh,
and
no.
Yeah, he loves that stuff because he loves money. So NFTs, from what I've gathered anyway.
It's so funny because...
Yes.
He's a relic of the past trying to hold on to something that might be the next big thing.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I've talked to a lot of NFT lovers, and if you're one of those NFT lovers, please chime in. Find me, non-Trotsky, on Twitter. Tell me why you love NFTs. But the ones I've talked to have essentially said, well, listen, I love money. That's where I'm at. I'm not that interesting. I don't really like movies. I don't like TV shows. I don't like going outside. I don't like other people.
Oh.
I love that money, but I'm so boring. All I talk about is stocks and different ways to leverage your capital. But NFTs, it's like a little picture of a cat. And I get to be like a part of this cool new crypto thing. So it's like a way for me to feel like I'm not the most boring person in the
world. People really say that they're boring to you?
No, but they tell me, well, I've been in the financial world for a long time, and I've done very well, but I've been waiting for the next thing to happen that can really spark people's curiosity about the world of finance. And like, you know you're boring. And NFTs are not as boring as the rest of the stuff you do. And you're hoping that, one, that makes you less boring. Two, that you'll suck other people into this scam. That I'm not an NFT expert. I know some NFTs, they have a setup around them so they don't use all the computing power that's causing global warming. There's ways to do like green friendly NFTs. Most of them are not. Most of them ask a computer to run a bunch of calculations in order to generate the key number they're real bad for the environment. And they're completely worthless. It's just creating a new currency for no reason in order to try to get rich with it. That's the only thing they do. And the guy who is responsible, from what we can tell, and I'm not going to give you his Twitter handle because I don't want to get him more Twitter followers, but I looked him up. It's just NFTs and QAnon. It's all he talks about. And the Hellraiser NFT for Dead by Daylight.
No way, really. So
he's
got three
topics. Like, look at my new NFT, Dead by Daylight. And also, look at this badge. Look at that. Look, if you zoom in on the jacket that Seth Rogen was wearing.
Oh, dear Lord. To the Emmys.
Why is that an upside down P? Isn't that a B? That means Trump's going to get reinstated.
Yep, he was robbed.
On the 1st of December, because what is a D if not a B? That's
a
facing the wrong way.
December, for sure.
In December, he will be.
In December.
All that nonsense. So,
So
it's kind of soured what could have been a fun, spooky time.
Yeah, for sure.
People are still going to buy the DLC, I think. They'll just avoid the NFT. NFTs really losing a lot of cred.
That's great.
Steam, they won't let you, because there's games now that when you buy the game, you get an NFT, or you need to get NFTs in order to play the game. They've tried all that stuff too. And a lot of that had stolen artwork in it.
Wow.
As well. Steam just won't let you buy those games on Steam anymore because, and they didn't even announce why. It's because it's obviously sucky. So, thanks for saving us.
That's kind of fantastic. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Steam. Yeah.
Yeah.
If only Netflix made such good choices.
That's true.
That's a whole other story.
While Pinhead's always coming from that spooky box, NFTs are something that just really sucks.
So, Hellraiser maybe not coming out of the shadows into the light of wonder and joy and having a renaissance anytime soon. But someone who might is Johnson.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
No. Dwayne The Rock Johnson. How many renaissances does he have? Should be Dwayne The Renaissance Johnson. Renaissancen.
The Renaissancen, yeah.
Johnson Renaissance.
Johnson Renaissance. Yeah, that was, oh gosh.
Dad humor du jour.
Just gonna...
You just did the people's elbow to me and the people's eyebrow. That was great. No, it's Johnson, the metal skull who's on fire and turns into a gun and is a phallic object.
Wait a minute. What?
Johnson! He later became Eight Hearts, who's got a skull in a bird cage and kind of a superhero costume. Johnson!
I don't know!
You don't know that Johnson?
No.
Johnson.
A man entered the depths of hell and discovered a skull dick gun, and they became best friends. Thus begins our story.
Let's talk about Johnson. Johnson was the co-star in a game called Shadows of the Damned about going to hell.
Oh my gosh.
So spooky.
Yeah, it's creepy even.
Yeah, there's bird demon. There's all sorts of trouble. You get infested with the darkness and you need to shoot a goat head in order to make the light come back to keep you alive. You got a flame. Your name is Garcia Hotspur in this game. Covered with hot tattoos. You look a lot like Benicio del Toro.
Oh, yeah.
Wearing a purple jacket. Leather jacket.
Yeah, purple leather
Looking
jacket.
For your sexy girlfriend, Paula, who may be the devil. And there are certain parts of Shadows of the Damned where it suddenly turns into the best Evil Dead 2 game you've ever played. Hmm. Evil Dead 2, I don't know if you've seen it. You're in a shack. Well, I should say this. I feel like it's me, but it's the star of the movie. Bruce Campbell plays Ash, and he is in a shack, and suddenly his dead girlfriend just starts chasing him around.
Yeah.
And he cuts off her head. Doesn't matter. Oh, yeah. Head comes back on, starts spinning around independently of the body, and... Yeah, trying to get him with a... He's got the chainsaw. She flips around. Oh, yeah. Anyway, real spooky. They do all that in Shadows of the Damned, too. The girlfriend starts chasing you around and cackling. It's a lot of fun. And this is a Suda51 game.
Oh.
We've talked about Suda51 before. He recently revealed that his company now has the rights.
Who did he reveal it to?
To me. But some people got mad at me about it. Some people were like, he already revealed that, or that's old news, or this is the first time he had talked to me about that, and I interview him about once a year. And there had been rumors that they had reclaimed it because it was a situation where Electronic Arts, one of the biggest video game companies in the world, published the game and told him how to make the game, and he was super sad about it. He had a completely different vision for the game, but they're like, that's actually not going to sell. You need to get guns in it. You need to get sex in it. You need to blah, blah, blah. So the game was not his. But now the game could be his because he now has the full rights to it. I don't know if he has the rights to the game that they made together, him and Electronic Arts, but he has rights to the characters and to make new games with them. That much I know for sure. So that could be a spooky fun surprise, Johnson.
Yeah,
he could be coming back. And another wild thing happened that's maybe not so great.
Uh-oh.
A Chinese mobile game developer just bought Suda51's company. That just happened today, yeah.
This has happened since you interviewed him.
Yeah. Like, it's just been story after story. I interviewed Suda51 recently. You can watch the video on Destructoid.com's YouTube channel. It was pretty warmly received by the fans. A few were annoyed that I was a little too cavalier and...
Oh, my gosh.
With Suda. A little,
think,
a little
who do you
casual.
Think you are, there's Jonathan
little,
Holmes?
There is a little...
Do you think you're famous?
I think so.
Since you've been on Road Rules?
That was not the accusation this time. But yeah, some said, who do you think you are, Jonathan Holmes? If I were Suda, I would have walked out on that, on that interview. But Suda had a pretty good time with the interview. He was laughing a lot.
Yeah.
And that was fun. That's where he told me that he had the rights to Shadows of the Damned again. They may do something with that. I hope he gets to make the game he always wanted to make in the first place that wasn't gun-focused. It was about being in a village. It was going to be called Kuriyami. Dark, scary. Kuriyami means darkness in Japanese. And thoughtful about trying to dig into the unknown and try to rebuild yourself. You start off with no shirt, you have nothing but a torch and the original concept for the game. And then eventually you're able to build yourself up essentially from nothing and pull yourself out of the darkness. That's my understanding is what the original concept was.
Yeah.
The final game has tons of dick jokes instead.
Oh.
Tons and tons.
What do you think happened there? Somebody else got involved?
I said,
you need to liven this up a little bit. It's a little intense. We're not soul searching here, Jonathan. We're going to bring somebody else in to...
Jonathan?
I don't know.
I was unfortunately not a part of the team. I actually did a launch interview with the director of the game. Suda did not direct it. He co-wrote the story and executive produced it. But Massimo Guarini, I think his name is. Really nice guy. He maybe liked some of the dick jokes. Also, Mikami, who is the co-creator of the Resident Evil series and made some of the best Resident Evil games before leaving, he worked on it. It just didn't work out. The meddling from EA apparently is what they say caused the problems with the game. I loved the game, though. I get what they're saying, but I liked it just the way it was. And the dick jokes,
yep.
I think, pure speculation here, that was the team saying, all right, we can't make the game we want. What are we left with? What power do we have? We have the power to do tons of dick jokes. And let's just exercise that power. We can't.
It's like the Disney animators.
A little bit like that. How they slip the dick in the the background of the Little Mermaid. And
yeah.
And boner on the priest.
Yeah, there's some sort of a dick in every Little Mermaid. There, I believe at one in one of the movies, a 69 pops up or something like that.
That kind of stuff. I think it was a little bit of that. But more overt. Like, there's a scene in the game. It's not my favorite scene in Shadows of the Damned. Where you have to fight these giant monsters in the midst of this strange, beautiful, but scary neon city with all these kind of parodies of the kind of neon signs you'd see in Las Vegas. And these monsters are stomping down the street coming to get you. And Johnson, who is a gun and also a skull.
And his name is Johnson.
Goes, oh, I'm feeling so ready for this. Oh, I'm sorry, he's British. I'm feeling so ready for this. Terrible. And you're... gun gets really, really big and long, and Garcia Hotspur just starts repeating over.
Hotspur?
Yeah, and every time he shoots, there's a random chance he will say, check off my big boner! But he says it like 9 out of 10 of the times.
Wow.
And you have to shoot the gun like
50
times.
Wait, he says, check off my big boner?
Check out my big boner.
Oh.
I didn't pronounce it as well as I should have. Yeah. Check out my big boner.
I thought
it
said jack off.
I wouldn't have been surprised.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that was a little much. Or friend, yeah.
Jerk me.
Yeah,
that would be weird. Yeah, yeah.
I think they go there a couple of times, yeah. So it may be bad news. Who knows if Suda51 is going to get to make the games make with his mobile company, who I assume bought his company from a different company called Gung Ho that had bought Grasshopper like 7 or 8 years ago.
Jeez.
And he really struggled, from what I could tell, under them. He only worked on, I think, 3 games under the Gung Ho contract, and now some other company has acquired them, and they're saying he's going to have full creative freedom, and they can't wait for him to make console games. They're not going to force him to make just phone games, but I'm a little scared.
Yeah.
It's a little spooky.
Oh my gosh, it's very scary.
It could be that No More Heroes 3 will be like, the last real game from him. Who knows?
I'm sort of glad that this announcement came out after your interview, because it didn't, you know, taint your interview with him, because you could just really explore the No More Heroes game and that kind of thing, as opposed to focus on this news.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
So.
But still, I can't wait to talk to him again and find out.
I know.
If he's okay. he's reacquired.
I listened to the interview.
Oh,
and
thanks.
Yeah. Gotta support your friends.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And he seemed pretty excited and happy.
He did. So that is as good as it's going to get. And I'll take that and hope for the best.
New Shadows of the Damned is coming. I hope it's fun.
Tani, do you like chocolate?
Oh my God. Do I ever?
Do you like ghosts?
Depends. Yeah. I mean, is it like the scary library ghost, or is it the friend ghost?
Do you know about that blowjob ghost?
Oh, I think I do. Wasn't it
Slimer? People have thought that Slimer may be a bukkake metaphor. Because he slimes you and you feel so funky.
What was the blowjob? It's in Ghostbusters, right?
Yeah, so Ghostbusters is a really interesting movie. It is a movie that I don't think would be all that popular if it came out today, though there is a new one coming out. Dan Aykroyd legitimately loves ghosts and is obsessed with them and just thinks about them. He's like, it's kind of going to be a comedy, but I just want to think about and talk about and write about and pretend about ghosts for a long time. And then Ivan Reitman and other folks involved were like, let's make it kind of absurd. But though Dan Aykroyd's character in it doesn't have that many jokes. He's just like, I want to talk about the spectrometer. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
like,
he's very excited
turbo about, nerd about ghosts.
Ghosts, yeah.
And he also is like, there'll be a scene where we go to a haunted house, and then my character lies on the bed and gets relaxed. And
that's
all
right.
Of a sudden, a beautiful woman, ghost, comes in, starts undoing his belt, get ready to give him a blowjob. That's going to be the movie.
It's in a montage, right? Is it in sort of a montage?
Wasn't his original plan. His original plan was like, this will be a major part of the movie. It'll be great when he gets the blowjob. You'll really be feeling it. You'll be really loving it. It's going to be a hit with the kids.
Oh my God.
I don't know if that's true, Mr. Aykroyd. When it came time to edit it, they just put it in a dream sequence. They show him and the other Ghostbusters like rolling around in a bed for some reason. And it's implied that Dan Aykroyd is dreaming about, what if I got a blowjob from a ghost? End montage.
Yeah.
So there's those kinds of ghosts.
Yeah.
For a more innocent, well, at least, I'm not saying that blowjobs aren't innocent, but a less sexually charged but still fun form of ghost romp, we've got a new game that just got announced called The Haunted Chocolatier.
Oh my gosh.
What's that? I see a spooky ghost and something that might be so very sweet.
Our prior reviewer, one of the friends of the show, a collaborator, a contributor to the show, Laura, who reviewed games like Freddy's Spaghetti and a Airport for Aliens currently run by dogs. She has less excitement about those kinds of games, but what she loves is Stardew Valley. She liked Down in Bermuda.
Yes, she loved Down in Bermuda.
That was a game she loved. She loves Stardew Valley, and she immediately texted both of us to tell us that The Haunted Chocolatier just got announced. It's the new game by the creator of Stardew Valley. And this is hopefully going to be a spooky, fun surprise for folks who don't know it already. Stardew Valley, very, very popular game, made mostly by one person who goes by Concerned Ape. That's his Twitter handle. It's sold millions of copies for like $10 to $20 each. And I think most of the money just went to Concerned Ape.
Wow.
So chances are Concerned Ape is
not so concerned anymore.
Just not about money anyway. Yeah. And the game has continued to sell. It's the kind of game that he'll do a little update for it, and it'll make headlines everywhere, because the way video games are now, as opposed to when I was younger, a game would come out, People would play it. They would beat it. They would say thank you. They would bring it back to GameStop or whatever. Now games are made to be played for an extended period of time because the hope is that the internet will keep people talking about it. And if people are playing it, the internet will talk about it. If the internet talks about it, new people will buy it. Right. New people will play it, interact with other people who've been playing it for 6 years. That'll cause new stories to come out. So it's a cycle of keeping it in people's mind, keeping the signal boosted, and keeping the mind share being kept up by just a few games. So
you could do slight updates to an existing game, and it would...
All of a sudden, I mean, that's Fortnite's
whole... It's almost like making a new game.
Yeah. You know, Minecraft just announced, now the pigs open their mouths wider, and it's making all these...
Oh my gosh, all these headlines. And they're making tons of money because of that?
Yeah, it's more like seasons of a TV show now. And people will come back to the show they like because it's got core elements they like, characters they like. But instead of buying a sequel to a game or expecting there to be a sequel after sequel, there's only ever been one Minecraft game. And then there's spin-offs like Minecraft Story Mode and whatnot. But people bought that one game and then just enjoyed the updates. Many of them are free, but you can also buy paid extra content as well.
Jeez.
Instead of just doing a weird update to Stardew Valley, the creator of it decided to make a whole new game called The Haunted Chocolatier that looks almost exactly like Stardew Valley, but now there's ghosts.
Wow, and is it coming out in time for Halloween?
Nope, but he announced it in time for Halloween, okay. So we can talk about it. And there's chocolate. You run, I think, like a chocolate
You store? Are the chocolatier.
I think so. And you go out and you fight monsters a little, but if you wanted to skip fighting them, I bet you wouldn't have to do it that much. You get ingredients from fighting them, then you go back and you make some chocolate and you walk around town and talk to people. And at dusk, the town is beautiful and you can approach someone and say, would you like to go on a date? Wow. And then there's a big sweaty guy who's some sort of blacksmith or something, and he apologizes for being sweaty. Maybe you can ask a sweaty guy out on a date. Who knows? And then the ghosts are all in your chocolate zone, and they seem to be sweet, friendly ghosts.
Yeah,
they
don't seem to be causing trouble. Like.
Yeah. The haunted chocolatier. But at the end of the trailer, a menacing-looking Caucasian man who's somewhat wrinkly, who are the scariest villains of all. You know, racism. It's been around for a while. That said, most villains I can think of over the years in James Bond or in horror movies like the Tall Man and Phantasm, they're usually older, maybe balding, wrinkly Caucasian fellas. They are, I think, seen, and Dracula, Nosferatu, there's another one, they're seen as maybe having power, which makes them scary.
Yeah.
When you put a marginalized person, there's plenty of times that marginalized folks have been demonized or made to be othered and seen as the scary anti-good, but they're usually not the big, powerful villains because they're just not feared in that way because they don't have any power in society. So you get a movie like Silence of the Lambs, sure, they make the character who is gender identity exploring also a scary killer.
Yeah.
But it's really that wrinkly white guy, Hannibal, who you really think is going to get you.
Yeah.
He's the real...
smart.
Yeah. He's the head honcho villain. And it looks like Haunted Chocolatier may do something similar. It looks cute and sweet until suddenly the trailer ends in a Hannibal-esque / Crypt Keeper / Nosferatu / James Bond type villain says something spooky, and then it just stops. Like, oh, he's gonna get
you. So do you think that this whole Haunted Chocolatier thing is just a ruse, like just a portion of the video game, and there's even more that's like...
The creator of the game said, with Stardew Valley, I was so happy. This is not an exact quote, but he said that he knows the game has a lot of fans and he was so happy they have fans. And he wants to give those fans what they want. And that has been incredible to know what his audience wants and to be able to give it to him and succeed at that. With this new game, he's saying people have no expectations, so I can go a little bit wild. I don't have to worry as much about giving people what they want. I can say this is a whole new thing and get ready for surprises. And maybe this being an actual somewhat scary game will be one of those surprises.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
It's pretty exciting.
Wow. Does it look sort of similar to Stardew Valley in the way it's crafted?
Yep. It's the exact same.
So that's exactly why people are so excited.
Well, yeah. If it were, well, yes and no. Some people are saying, this probably should have been DLC or blah, blah, blah. They haven't played it yet, though. But the character animations look the same. The camera angle's the same. The general premise is the same. But it's got ghosts and chocolate and this villain guy at the end. And more in the ways, from what I can tell, of combat as well. And not managing a farm. You're managing a chocolate store.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
I'm much more interested in this because of how dynamic it seems to be thematically. It's changing from sweet and dating focused to slightly spooky to then very spooky and also more action oriented.
Yeah.
So as someone who didn't really care about Stardew Valley that much, I'm pretty excited. They got their hooks in me. And when it comes out, we'll see if we can.
And when is that coming out?
No one knows.
Oh, damn it.
He's not going to commit to that. Yeah. I think he's probably making this game largely by himself again. So it's done when it's done. You've worked on big projects before. Ugh. You can be so sure you're done. And then one last thing. Oh, well, did you set the format to SWF or is it still in PNG or something like that? Oh, yeah. Using a shared drive.
Oh, that changes everything.
Everything could go wrong. Well, we can't access your drive or you don't have the ability to share that file with
You've got to download it, reformat it, because it's gonna the download's gonna alter everything.
Yep, so many ways it can go wrong. So it'll be done when it's done. But for now, I sit in anxious, optimistic anticipation for the Haunted Chocolatier.
Haunted Chocolatier, it seems really weird, but I am so here for it, here for it, here for it, here for it, here.
How about you, Tanya? Are you going to dress up for
I have already dressed up.
Oh, yeah? For some poll?
It was for a chair dance class at a strip club.
Chair dance, which is different than pole dance.
Yeah, yeah. It's all in the same, you wear the same shoes, and it's all the same sort of stuff. It's like, there were people using the pole there, but I was a skeleton, a sexy skeleton.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
But for actual Halloween, do you think you'll wear something as well, or?
I do know that I'm doing Nasty Night at my pole studio.
Does that involve costumes?
It will this year.
Oh, fun.
I don't really have any Halloween plans.
We could talk about that. You'd make a great Bayonetta.
That's
very involved costume, though, but it's similar shoes.
What would I do? I'd just hang out here.
You're going to go to Nasty Night, maybe.
It's a couple days prior.
That's fine, yeah. We just got to get those gun shoes for you. We got to get you several guns, at least four, that you hold at all times.
Hold in my hands.
And feet.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say I could strap on like multiple holsters, but they would get in the way of my floor work.
No, her guns are handheld, and then
how am I gonna hold on to a pole? Like
shoe
that?
Held. I have to look into it. She stores them because she also punches and does flips and stuff. She uses her hands for other stuff. She pole dances too.
Flips.
Not while holding guns. And she doesn't hold guns when she does that stuff.
Yeah, you can. I'm demonstrating to Jonathan. If you have your hands like this, this is like how you do cartwheels with guns in your hands.
Good to know. Okay, I don't want you to actually hold guns.
I don't plan on it.
Oh, good.
I'm just going to be a skeleton again.
That's probably for the best.
Go talk of what you do it, what you do it, what you do it, what you do it, what you do it so bad.
So there's one last item we could talk about, I suppose. Is it spooky to you, Tanya, that people hate Kotaku.com so
people
much?
People hate Kotaku.com.
They do. They hate that .com. They're so mad about it. And I don't know if it's worth talking about. I don't know if it's spooky or not. I think a lot of people who don't write about video games are like, please, why would I care about this? But to me, it's endlessly fascinating when smart, good people are just totally wrong about something. Like, I find QAnon kind of interesting, too. I know smart, good people who get hooked into that world, and a feedback loop occurs, as we talked about many episodes ago, QAnon Among Us episode, I believe it's called, where they get rewarded for talking about QAnon by other QAnon people, and then that reward drives them to go look up more QAnon stuff, and it's kind of a competition.
Just confirmation bias.
Yeah, confirmation bias, and also that feeling of community and validity when
I'm so seen.
Yeah.
We're talking about the truth, man.
Have you seen some of these QAnon folks saying, like, Q is me, Q is you, Q is love?
Like, do they very cult-like. Do they get, like, yeah, these are classic cults.
Yeah, and this was a doctor saying that one. That was a direct quote, I think.
It's so funny because it's like the exact definition of cult tactics, and these poor folks are so sucked in.
Yeah, ugh. But they're other than looking wrong and their family saying, I don't like you anymore, they're generally doing okay. I haven't heard of anyone who, like, I lost my millions to QAnon or something. That's the good news anyway. It's not like NFTs in that it's often a scam.
And they're not like, going to some remote location, you know, to have a retreat.
Not that I'm aware of.
They're just doing their shitty internet searches.
I think so. It's just a lot of middle-aged bored folks who feel special.
Want to feel part of something and like they really are understood.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, it seems like HaydenKotaku.com, I don't want to call it KAnon, but I kind of do. KAnon. They hate Kotaku so much, and it's really weird to me and interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if it will be to you. I'll tell you a little bit about it.
You're going
to
tell me anyways.
Yeah, just a little bit, just in case, see what happens. So Kotaku has been a symbol of video game journalism gone wrong to a lot of people for a while. And it's in part, I think, because for a time they would say, well, we're journalists, but we're all just kind of video game bloggers.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
We're writing about stuff that generally isn't important. And for me, the line between journalist and blogger is, were you writing about people? Were you writing about something that actually mattered to the human race? Like, the way you wrote about that person's story. Let's say there was a fire. Let's say there's a war. Let's say there's some political debate or something that actually affects people's lives. And that's journalism.
You need to do your best to uphold the truth. Whereas a blogger, you're writing about your opinions.
Yeah,
you're writing about your experience. It could be a similar topic, the same topic.
Mm.
But it's not that story. It's your story.
Sure. And it is about something that important. You can tell your story and have it be journalism. If it's my story in the concentration camps, or if it's my story surviving XYZ thing, if it's my story playing Metroid and I sort of liked it, that's no longer journalism. That's just fluff. That's fun. That is not important stuff. And that's what drew a lot of people to the video game blogging world in the first place. It's like, oh, life is so stressful. Life is so serious. Can't we just goof around and talk about video games for a little while? It doesn't really matter.
That's what you love to do?
I love to goof around and talk about video games for a while. Gosh. I like to do it well. I like for the people who read the things I write to not hate it.
Well, you also like to have it be something that spurs thought and conversation.
Sure. But if the worst that happens is somebody reads my video game blog and thinks, well, that was kind of dumb.
I disagree with that guy.
Yeah, unless I was writing about the people who make the games. That's when I put my journalism hat on and say, well, actual lives are going to be affected by this. I'm sharing an actual human being's story. This isn't just whether I think the latest Pokemon news is big stuff or little stuff. It's actual human beings being affected by it. So that's my opinion. But yes, a lot of people think that all writing about video games for a website is officially video game journalism if you're getting paid. And you've got to do it right. If you do it wrong, you're super terrible and you need to be destroyed. And that's what people are saying about Kotaku. They want them destroyed.
Oh,
Metroid opinions.
Does it have to be that harsh, though? Like, does it have to be that extreme?
Well, yeah. Why do you think it's so extreme? I have my opinions, of course. Where do you think it comes from? This sense that people clearly are in fight or flight mode about Kotaku.com's. They'll write a story saying, hey, you can emulate this new Metroid game. You can pirate the old ones. And people will immediately be like, this cannot stand. You must take this story down. And their feeling clearly is, this is doing damage to someone.
Wow.
And you know what? People were going to pirate those Metroid games anyway. And other blogs wrote the exact same story No one cared.
One so Kotaku it's really it. Targeted oh against them.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, I can't understand why just them, other than there must be some history there.
Yeah, there's always history, and they've written a lot of stuff that their readers love, but for whatever reason, people just discount 99.9% of their stories, and maybe once or twice a month, they'll write a story that everyone props up as like, we need to destroy Kotaku because of this one. And more recently, under their new management, they have been a lot looser, a lot less focused on trying to sound professional, a lot more swears and whatnot, and also willing to go out and say other blogs could be better, and criticizing other blogs, which I think invited people to say, well, if you're going to throw the first punch, we'll punch you back. And that's not a choice I would have made. If they keep doing that stuff,
yeah,
I'm not going to be mad at Kotaku, but I will email their editor-in-chief and say,
are you shitting on me, man?
Well, not
I'm
me.
I'm a good-spirited blogger, just like yourselves. They just care about... Don't hate the play, I hate the game. The video game!
You're so excited you strung that together. I don't anticipate they will do that to me, and if they do, I wouldn't care. But if they continue to attack other bloggers or criticize them, I will probably write them and say, I really think you're making a mistake because you're turning this whole thing into the Cartman drama triangle, which is such a mess. The Cartman drama triangle, as you probably know if you've talked to me before, victims, victimizers, protectors are in this triangle. When people are in fight or flight, or when they're lacking empathy, or when they're in a crisis, you get attacked by a bear, for instance, you immediately look at who's the victim, maybe me, who's the victimizer, probably that bear, and who can protect me? Is there anyone else who can stop this bear? Is there anyone else I can look to for guidance on how to deal with this situation? And when you see the world in that way, you either go into fight, flight, or freeze. Freeze is when you're looking around to see who's going to save me. Fight is when you say, I will be the protector. But oftentimes when you put on your fight hat, you're seen as the victimizer to whoever you're fighting, especially if they weren't a threat in the first place. Case in point, Kotaku.com, nothing they do matters. They're a video game blog. I mean, if they write about people poorly, and in the past, under a different editor-in-chief, they really bungled a story that actually affected somebody's life, and that really sucked. They were supposed to be journalists that day, and they screwed it up.
Yeah.
But that was out of thousands and thousands of stories that they wrote were good. Some about people, some about just whether the new Pokemon game is fun. But people get their fight or flight and their victim, victimizer, protector triangle mentality going.
Yeah.
With a video game blog. What do you think?
I think that people are bored. No.
You know, I mean, isn't there a plenty of other stuff going on?
Yeah, there really is.
Yeah.
I honestly think it has a lot to do with the internet. You know, just getting behind a keyboard and feeling empowered to just be shitty.
Sure.
And then once the ball gets rolling, you're bandwagoning with other people and it just, you know,
sure.
takes so over.
You find out that other people like making fun of Kotaku.com, so then you think, well, make fun of them too.
Or even, or you're just like, me. Oh, hey, that whole bandwagoning thing I think is a real phenomenon.
Big time. And it goes both ways. When somebody is really popular, a streamer, a YouTuber or something, and everyone's talking about how much they love them, then other people will say, well, I'll love them too. Yeah. And it's the only one anyone's talking about, so they must be the good one, so I won't explore what else is going on. Likewise with Kotaku, they'll have one story everyone says sucks, and then that's the only story anyone ever reads that they wrote that week. Now, to be fair, there are some video game bloggers who have said publicly, I will write about any game you want and say it sucks, and I guarantee you will get your money back and how many people click on the story just because they hate it. Some people have reverse engineered the bandwagging thing to make it a profit deal and get what they call hate clicks.
Yeah.
I've been accused of farming for hate clicks.
Oh my gosh.
Because I said I like a Smash Brothers game that you're not supposed to like. The common consensus was it's bad. I said, I think it's good. Oh, he's just farming for hate clicks. I just have opinions people hate. I'm not doing it on purpose. It's not that profitable, at least for me anyway. The times I've written things people hated, I didn't get paid more for that. But yeah, people have accused Kotaku of just trying to farm for hate clicks, and I don't think that's a sustainable business model. I don't think that's what they're doing. I think they're trying to honestly just allow their writers to share their perspectives and opinions and keep the conversation going. But yeah, people hate them.
I can't understand why it's so targeted to them when other bloggers and, you know, companies have equally or maybe even more inflammatory, you know, publishing.
Oh, sure. Yeah. A lot more inflammatory. I think for a lot of people, Kotaku symbolizes the establishment of video game blogs that they are not invited into. There's a whole in-group, out-group thing going on in people's minds. In this insular, super weird, everyone's an outsider, everyone's a nerd video game culture, even within that, people subdivide. Mm-hmm. And I'll continually be puzzled forever that streamers and YouTubers aren't considered the establishment because they're making the most money, they have the most influence, they're often getting by their looks. If you're not like a handsome young white dude, good luck finding an audience in streamers. It's a very ruling class sort of slice of the population who gets to be a professional streamer. You got to be young, cute, white guy with all the equipment and the time and the money, which already comes built in almost each and every instance, to have some sort of level of privilege.
Do they typically have to like be like athletic?
Not like athletic, but I can't think of any really beloved heartthrob streamers. And this is, we're talking, it's basically, you remember Tiger Beat? You remember like Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
And oh, yeah.
All those guys?
Yeah.
They don't really exist in the same way anymore. Now they're mostly YouTube personnel.
Right, they
are. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's, you've got to be like
kids.
The girls, I'll have a cute crush on you. I remember I was at PAX one year and walking down the street and there was just, it was like the Beatles or something. It was all these girls screaming in the street. And I was like, what is it? And they're like, it's the Q, it's the Q. I was like, and this is before QAnon. I was like, Q from Star Trek?
That's
like,
what no. I was thinking.
It's Q. And it turns out they were so excited they didn't fully pronounce it. It was the Cube. And it was these YouTube personalities, mostly guys, young white guys, cute guys, that just play Minecraft over and over. And they're signing posters and whatnot. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this. I'm saying that if you feel as though there's an establishment that's keeping you down, that if you feel as though you, as someone who loves video games, is being kept away from the upper crust, the people who are really in control of things, it's not the video game blogs. They're all relatively poor, weird.
Right.
Who wanna? They're willing to do this job where they're subjected to all this abuse and they don't.
You're
really
targeting your anger to the wrong place.
That's my point. Thanks for helping me get there.
Yeah.
They screw up sometimes. We all screw up sometimes. When Kotaku writes something you think sucks, find that writer. Tell him, hey, this article really upset me. I want to let you know why. Instead of saying, all Kotaku sucks and the video game journalism has gone to the dogs. Video game journalism barely exists.
Right.
I read an instance of actual journalism that has to do with video games maybe 5 or 6 times a year. You know who does a really good job with it is Legends of Localization.
Ooh.
Clyde Mandolin. He looks into how games were developed and localized and really finds out the human story behind the creation of some of your most interesting games now they were brought to this country. That's like journalism.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, me saying...
You must love that shit.
Yeah, I've got all those books. That takes a ton of time, ton of research, ton of work. It's fact-based, but also people-based. Oof. You gotta get it right.
Do you wish you could do that?
I mean, I wish I could do that in the same way I wish I could fly and be Superman. Like, oh, that would be fun. And also... That's a lot of responsibility. You got to do that right. I'm sort of happy that I get to just goof around and
write do your own blogs fun
and
stuff.
Magazines.
Yeah. Get in trouble.
Yeah, if I screw up, what's the worst that happened? I interviewed Suda51 and asked him a question that some people thought was rude. I asked him if he ever fantasized about becoming a superhero and killing a bunch of boring people in a meeting. I think a lot of people have had that fantasy. It wouldn't be that weird to be like, I hate this meeting so much. I wish all their heads exploded. he said, no, I'd never think anything like that. And I was like, really? Gotta give him a little wink, like, okay, sure. And people got mad that I did that. It was bad journalism. It was unprofessional, they said. That's what a lot of people want. They say for my interviews, no personality from you. Get the facts from me immediately. Every second should be spent drawing a fact out of the subject. And I get that. You don't care about me. You want to get your video game facts. I know that feeling. I've found anyway that when you interview people that way, they don't talk very much and they don't want to share much. And you don't get much of a eureka moment where they suddenly have an epiphany live. That's the best thing about interviewing people is when you see the subject be like, I never thought of this before, but actually the reason I made this game is, and then you get, first of all, an amazing connection with the person. Second of all, this revelation.
A real raw moment with them,
that nobody ever knew before. They didn't even know before. When your subject discovers something about themselves that even they didn't know before, you can bet that their fans and their audience didn't know before either. Ugh. And everyone gets to have that feeling of, now we know, together. That's so much fun. Great. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm loving it.
I'm loving it.
Kotaku, I'm gonna block you for not writing about video games just right this time.
Gonna close it up. I want to wish everyone a fantastic Halloween.
Watch out for those razor blades.
Very casual. Yeah, don't get killed out there, kids. Have a
those
fun,
old ladies
safe
with
Halloween.
Those apples.
Oh,
don't
I know.
Take an apple.
What they're giving kids these days is marijuana candies.
Oh, really?
I don't know
really?
If you've seen those. Yeah, there's candies that look like sour.
Oh, gummies.
Sour heads. What are they called again?
Warheads.
Warhead. Or thunderheads.
Sour heads.
Maybe it's sour heads. Sour balls. Sour patch. Patch heads.
Sour Patch Kids?
The point is they're packed with weed.
Weed.
Yeah, so it's just weed candies. So look out for weed candies and razor blades.
Imagine,
kids.
Oh gosh, I'm thinking about kids getting stoned, going to bed early.
I know.
Eating snacks.
The nightmare. Nightmare that could happen up there. If you want more of me, I'm a non-Trotsky on Twitter. I write for Nintendo Force Magazine. We got a new issue coming out. You can get it for $5 if you subscribe before October 29th, I think it is. And I'm writing over still at Destructoid.com. Just interviewed Suda51 and had a great time.
That's exciting. If you want more of me, sorry. Can't have it.
Yeah.
Just come back to the show in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we're doing about every 2 weeks. We're having a great time. Tell your friends, too. If you like the show, let them know. It's a good show. Listen to it. If you don't like the show, listen to it again.
Yeah.
You'll like it more next time.
Maybe.
Or not. Who knows? Gotta write all those theme songs now.
I know you do. You've got your work cut out for you.
I know, Jason. We got a chocolate one. We got a pinhead
one.
Got a Johnson one.
A Kotaku one.
And a Kotaku. That's gonna be like eight songs.
Yeah. And you've got to do the outros.
I know. That's why it's eight. It's four intros, four outros.
Yeah. Oh.
How do you even sing about Kotaku.com?
We're gonna find out.
thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks.